I promised last week that I would tell more of the story about Unitarian Universalism and the civil rights movement. As I said last week, our denomination at times failed to live up to our faith in human equality. But often, we rose to the challenge. When Unitarian Universalists all over the country decided to answer Dr. King's call for solidarity, we embodied our commitment to the inherent worth and dignity of all people. It is one thing to talk and think about what we believe. It is another to embody it. In February 1965, at a peaceful protest demanding equal voting rights, a black man named Jimmy Lee Jackson was shot by police as he tried to protect his grandfather from being beaten. A week later, Jackson died of his wounds. And Jackson's death sparked outrage in the black community, but was not covered much by white national media. Many African Americans had died at the hands of whites, and Jimmy Lee Jackson's death was seen as just another instance of this. However, as we know, locally, Jackson's death was in a large part the inspiration for organizing a march to Montgomery to face Governor Wallace about police brutality and voting rights. As I told you last week, on March 7, 1965, at 4:57 in the morning, Martin Luther King sent a telegram to all denominational headquarters asking for clergy to join him in Selma, Alabama. We were, and still are, a small denomination, but over 200 Unitarian Universalists, including one-fifth of our clergy, attended. Gordon Gibson was ordained to our ministry on March 7th, 50 years ago, and the next day he left for Selma. And he said later he remembered the words someone had said to him at his ordination as he was leaving. They said, "Don't go to Selma unless it's more important that you go than that you come back." There are many stories of our ministers dropping everything to head to Selma 50 years ago. My favorite stories are of the congregations who came together the afternoon and evening after Dr. King's telegram and said to their minister, "Pack your bags, you are going." There was Clark Olson, who was out in Berkeley, California, when he heard King's call to action on the radio. He wanted to go, but he began playing in his head all the reasons not to. He couldn't afford a ticket, for one thing, to fly to Selma overnight. He had a number of committee meetings he was going to miss if he went. So he returned home and found that two members of his congregation had split the cost of his plane ticket, and he left the next morning. Do we have any folks here who are on our social action committee? I see our chair over there. Can you give a little wave, Ken? Thank you all back there. So in Indiana, the Bloomington Church's social action committee met at 8 p.m. on March 7th to respond to Dr. King's telegram. By 10:45 that night, they sent their minister home packing, Reverend David Johnson. And by 12:45 a.m., he was on a flight to Atlanta. After the long drive and arriving in Selma, Reverend Johnson wrote in his journal, "We had come because we had to. We were late, very late, 12 years late. The first voter registration drive was in 1952, and they," he's referring to African Americans, "were beaten into submission, beaten on street corners, on the steps of the courthouse, in their own churches, in their own homes, and we did not notice." The Unitarian Universalists who came to Selma were ready to notice, ready to embody their beliefs. One of the Unitarian Universalist ministers who came to Selma was named James Reeb. Reverend Reeb was born in Wichita, Kansas in 1927. He married his wife Marie in 1950, and they had four children together and led busy lives, as you might imagine. Reeb served as the associate minister of the 1,000-member congregation All Souls Unitarian in Washington, D.C. But as the civil rights movement began to intensify, Reeb began to feel that he was not doing enough to end segregation and the fear and hatred he saw in his society. Reeb knew nothing would change unless white people could build community with black people. He moved his family to Roxbury, outside of Boston, to live in a black neighborhood where people were struggling to make ends meet. And Reeb made his life's work about desegregation and fair housing, living with the people he hoped to serve. When Reeb flew to Selma in 1965, it was not for a one-time demonstration. It was to stand by his daily embodied belief in the inherent worth and dignity of all people. Once in Selma, James Reeb met up with Orloff Miller and Clark Olson, two of his colleagues, for dinner. They decide to eat at an integrated restaurant, despite the fact that people in charge of the orientation for the march in Selma were saying, stay out of that neighborhood, it's not safe right now. And as they left the restaurant, a handful of white supremacist men began to follow them. And the three ministers sped up, kept saying, stay calm, just don't engage with them. But then, before they knew what was happening, one of these men clubbed James Reeb across the head and beat the other two terribly. Reeb died a few days later. And word of his death was covered heavily by media. President Johnson made over 50 phone calls to the hospital checking in on Reeb's progress. He called Marie Reeb to give his condolences. Martin Luther King called as well. All over the country, tens of thousands of people began to hold vigils and protests. Most Americans did not know Jimmie Lee Jackson's name. It took hearing about the death of a white minister to mobilize. And on this day, March 15th, 50 years ago, Martin Luther King gave the eulogy at James Reeb's memorial service. King said, Reeb's death was the result of a sensitive religious spirit. His crime was that he dared to live his faith. He placed himself alongside the disinherited black brethren of his community. The world is angered over the murder of James Reeb, for he symbolizes the forces of goodwill in our nation. He demonstrated the conscience of our nation. He was a witness to the truth that men of different races and classes might live, eat, and work together. That same day, President Johnson spoke of James Reeb's death as he introduced the Voting Rights Bill to Congress, which passed in August of that year. And far away from Selma, in Detroit, Michigan, Viola Liuzzo, a Unitarian Universalist lay leader, was watching all of this news unfold. Liuzzo was haunted by what was happening in Selma. She spoke to her husband and her five children, and she told them she had to go. Liuzzo drove the family station wagon to Selma and helped pick up people who were marching from Selma to Montgomery and couldn't quite make it. And on March 25th, Liuzzo and a young African-American man were driving a group of protesters to the train station. when a car full of Ku Klux Klan members pulled up next to them and shot Viola, killing her instantly. Grace and Carl Lindquist, also Unitarian Universalists, wrote to Viola's husband. Their letter read, "Dear Mr. Liuzzo, we are grief-stricken for you and your children. Our eyes are wet with tears. But beneath our grief is pride. She did something for us. We are determined it shall not be in vain. She has gone with others who have died for humanity. Medgar Evers, Reverend James Reeb, James Lee Jackson, the three civil rights workers, the four girls in Sunday school, and many more. All these and Viola died for humanity, for human rights, for justice. What can we do? We can and must do what your wife did. We can take action and not sit idly by. We can go and do something." As Unitarian Universalists, we don't always talk about the people who died in service to our faith. I am grateful that we are much more focused on living our faith rather than dying for it. However, it is fitting on occasions like these, 50 years later, to speak names like James Reeb and Viola Liuzzo aloud. It is fitting to be filled to the brim with gratitude for people who lost their lives embodying our faith. My dad attended a segregated middle school. My mom was 10 years old when all of this was taking place in Selma. It's hard to get my head around how recently in our history this happened. Unfortunately, society and individuals do not heal as quickly as we wish they did. One generation later, we are still not living in a country at peace with its conscience. Children are still judged by the color of their skin and not the content of their character. For years, for decades, we have heard on repeat stories of people of color being killed by white police officers. And it's not that police are always reckless or that they're bad or power hungry or violent. No, most police officers go into police work to serve their communities, to make them better. It isn't that all people of color living below the poverty line are reckless and violent. But there is immense overflowing anger, and I tend to think that this anger is rooted in fear. Where is all of this fear coming from? How have we kept all this fear of people who look different so alive and healthy? We have to ask ourselves, what events, what mindsets, what have we been taught generation to generation with small comments that degrade other human beings based on the color of their skin? What have we been taught? And what have we in turn acted on and brought to life consciously and subconsciously that has led to all this fear? We have to ask ourselves, what have we all done to get to this place where police are so much more afraid of people of color, so much more likely to kill men of color during an altercation? What have we done to get to this place where so many people of color are living in poverty with little evidence that their society values their lives? We are still in a place where white people and people of color are afraid to be in community with one another. And so long as we are afraid or nervous or unsure of how to be human together, We won't reach the destination that thousands of people set out for when they crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge in 1965. My dad attended a segregated middle school, and we think that all should be healed just a generation later. I wish it worked that way, but it doesn't. Only one generation later, progress is ever so clear to me. Students are expelled for chanting racist diatribes. I attended all integrated schools where I became friends with Latina, African American, Indian American, Korean American students. Slow but sure, we are seeing television programs with fully developed leading characters who are people of color. Fairy tales and other children's books better represent the racial diversity of our country. Interracial marriage was not legal in all 50 states until 1967, but today one in 12 relationships is an interracial relationship. We are making progress, and much of this progress is rooted in the tumultuous events of the civil rights movement. It wasn't until the events of 1965 that people from my home congregation in South Carolina found the courage and the inspiration to create the first integrated kindergarten in South Carolina. It wasn't until 1965 that Black citizens slowly began to have a vote, a voice in shaping this country. If you took part in the civil rights movement in any way, if you attended a protest, if you had difficult conversations with your family members in the 1960s, would you raise your hand? What you did in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s mattered. It made a difference. And your story was the story that I learned in Sunday school that was passed down to my generation as evidence of, look, this is what the human spirit is capable of. Thank you. In Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, he says, I may not get there with you, but I have seen the promised land. And that sentence always provides a little peace for me. Martin Luther King did not live to see all the progress we have made. Neither did James Reeb or Viola Liuzzo. But I hear in this sentence a deep faith. I may not get there with you, but I have seen the promised land. I know James Reeb and Viola Liuzzo had this same unshakable belief. Why else would they go to Selma? Would they have risked everything for something futile? I don't think so. It gives me peace to know that they had seen a land governed by the laws of human equality in their dreams. As we heard Langston Hughes say in our reading, hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a field frozen with snow. We think with gratitude of all those who dreamed before us, all those who showed us what can happen when we embody our Unitarian Universalist faith. Thank you for giving us the courage to keep at it until we arrive at the land of promise. Blessed be. Amen.